Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Ellen Kider, Chief Curator at the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art, and we're talking about the new exhibition, Birdwatching with Eric Carle, on view through August 25th, 2024. Ellen, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me.
I think the Eric Carle Museum is one of my favorite museums in Massachusetts. It's my favorite art museum. I love that museum. How long has it been around? A lot of people don't know about it. I think that's because it's out in the valley. But how long has the Eric Carle been there?
We are in our 22nd year. The museum opened in 2002 in Amherst, Massachusetts. And it was founded by Eric and Barbara Carle. Eric, as you know, is the renowned picture book artist and author. And Barbara, who we called Bobby, was his wife, and she was an early childhood educator. And the idea for the museum really came about much earlier in the 1980s. Eric and Bobby were traveling through Japan on a book tour. In fact, they made several trips to Japan. They love Japan. And they noticed that there are more than 30 picture book art museums in Japan. And
Just in Japan alone.
And realized there was nothing like that here in the United States. So planted the seed, and they thought that over for a few years and, you know, really started to think about their legacy and what they wanted to leave for people and children in this country and really around the world. And that's how the museum came to be. And Eric and Bobby lived in Northampton and then also up in the hill towns of Western Massachusetts since the early 70s. People often ask, you know, how did the museum come to be in Amherst? And it's because this was their home and that place that they loved the most.
It's a beautiful museum, too. And I want to mention, there's plenty of parking. It's not like you're in an urban area where you have to sweat out that you're going to park. There's plenty of parking. Right. The museum is sort of nicely laid out all on one level. And it's a great place for young people. But if you're a person like myself who remembers every single book they read as a kid, that it's of amazing interest to adults too. I saw one of my my favorite exhibitions of all times was of Golden Book art from the Golden Books.
Oh, right.
And yep. I loved that show. I love seeing the original artwork. What's your mission statement for what you exhibit?
Well, we really are open to people of all ages. People often associate us as a museum for children.
You do special things for young people all the time.
Right. But we are not a sort of traditional children's museum in the sense that we don't have climbing structures or water tables, anything like that. We like to say that we are an art museum that welcomes children. 70% of our visitors are families with children, but 30% of our visitors are, you know, adults like you who come in on their own and are there for just a really wonderful art experience. And we have a lot of teachers, educators, but also just art lovers. This art can be appreciated by everybody. It's not just for children. It's, in fact, the art is incredibly sophisticated.
It is, and oftentimes you get the original artwork. I remember that about the Golden Book exhibition and other exhibitions I've seen. And it made all the difference of seeing the original artwork versus the printed artwork.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It's one of the great joys of my job is to be able to really spend time and handle and look at this art when it's not behind glass. But the experience is transformative. You really can see, you know, texture, colors better, you know, very often, especially early on in the 20th century. I mean, the printing techniques were not stellar all the time. So people are often surprised at how vivid the original artwork is. Of course, our printing techniques are much better today. But it's flat. It's a two-dimensional piece often when you see it in the book. But it really has, great vivacity to it in person. And picture books are very often a child's first experience with art. And so it makes a formative impression. And, there's a wonderful sense of nostalgia visiting the Carl because it, like, looking at those golden books that you recall, like, you still remember that and you still carried that around with you all these years. And so it's a place to look back, but also a place to look forward. We show a lot of contemporary art. We have an exhibition coming up this summer on the Brazilian artist Roger Mello. He's a Hans Christian Andersen winner, just a fabulous and inventive artist. But very few of his books have been translated into English. So we're really proud to be introducing his incredible body of work to a whole new audience.
Well, Ellen, this brings up
I hope many people have just like these sort of revelatory experiences when they come to the Carl.
Oh, it's amazing. Now, we're going to give out the website for the museum and we'll give it out at the end. So give it out the website right now.
Carlmuseum.org.
Okay.
Now, C-A-R-L-E, Carlmuseum.org.
Now, you don't have a permanent collection, do you?
Oh, we do.
Okay, but wait a minute. This I didn't know. What gets into the permanent collection?
We have one.
Do you make acquisitions all the time?
We do. And of course, I'm biased, but
I know you.
To say we have one of the world's premier collections of picture book art.
Oh, my God.
We care for over 11,000 objects.
Wow.
And we have art that covers over more than a century of art and history. So works from the late 19th century, the golden age of illustration, up to contemporary pieces. People often think that it's just Eric Carle, and we certainly have lots of Eric Carle, very proudly, but we actually have, I just did a tally the other day, 313 other artists in our permanent collection. it's such a rich and deep collection. And in fact, one of the exhibitions currently on view, it's called Alphabet Soup, How Picture Books Are Made from A to Z.
Oh,
that is entirely drawn from the Carl's permanent collection. And it is a show about process. And so it includes things that are not typically on display. We have scripts and sketches and storyboards and printing blocks. So really sort of providing this creative peek, or I should say peek behind the creative curtain, at, what artists do to prepare for creating a book. We have a wonderful selection of book dummies. It's just a very...
You have to explain for people who don't know what that is. What's a book?
I know, a little bit insider there. A book dummy is like a handmade mock-up that an artist often creates before going into starting the final illustrations for a book. So they're really testing out the rhythm of the book, text placement, color, just sort of seeing how the book flows from page to page.
So I just realized then, so you don't just have flat examples of the paintings or the drawings that go into the books. You actually have the books and things associated with the books as part of your collection.
We do. I would say
that's going to be a conservation nightmare.
Well, about 99% of the permanent collection is works on paper. But the other 1% are things like printing blocks, book dummies, things that are more dimensional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We do have a few sculptural pieces. We have not started collecting born digital art yet. We've started collecting, I should qualify that. We have started collecting some of the prints So if an artist has created a work completely on the computer, we would ask for a very high quality print of that image and for the artist to sign and date it. But we have not collected the digital files.
I think a lot of art museums are still working that out about how to collect digital art. But it's not just you. I think most art museums are still nervous about conserving and collecting digital art.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is a problem.
Absolutely.
Because all you need to do is have something crash and it's gone.
Right. And the work becomes, I mean, the files become obsolete so quickly.
Yeah, they do.
And trying to stay up with that technology. And we're just not set up for that. That is not, you know, we don't have the server space and things that to do that. It's something we will certainly consider and talk about with the collections committee over time. But it is something that, like, we've just dipped our toe into the process of with the prints. And but you know, more and more artists are working digitally these days, so it is something that we are going to have to sort of perhaps develop a mission statement or a philosophy toward. And you know, it is art. I don't disqualify it in any way. It absolutely is art. But how to collect, preserve, and exhibit it are things we're still working through.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight, I'm really excited to talk to her, is Ellen Kiter, Chief Curator at the Eric Carl Museum of Picture Book Art. We should talk about the exhibition that we talked about. Now, I am very excited about this exhibition because I'm a hardcore I'm a hardcore birder, and I've lectured about the birds at the Worcester Art Museum here many times, and I was excited to see the collection. It's Birdwatching with Eric Carl. It's going to be up through August 25th of this year. Now, I never knew that Eric Carl painted so many birds.
He did. It wasn't something that was initially obvious to me. I look at and study Eric's art every day, obviously, through my job. And the idea for this show came to me a couple years ago as I started to notice birds in almost every Eric Carl publication. You know, I knew of the birds that were protagonists, such as in Roosters Off to See the World or The Ten Little Rubber Ducks. But as I was looking more and more at Eric's art, I realized that very often there are birds as supporting characters, or there are even birds as background characters, or even more just, you know, in the landscape, if you will. So there was no shortage of imagery from what to pick. The challenge was really narrowing it down to the right amount of artwork and a diverse array of artwork for the exhibition. And I worked with our assistant curator, Isabel Ruiz-Cano, and we decided to display the art sort of very loosely, I would say, by habitat. So we have
That's an interesting choice. Interesting choice.
Yeah, we have tropical birds together, so flamingos, parrots.
He has a quetzal in this exhibition.
Yes, that's a beautiful piece. It's a beautiful.
I gotta ask you: do we know anything about how he chose different species? Because when I looked at the total list of the birds that are in here, it's pretty diverse, and you know, to put a quetzal in there, I mean, it is a gorgeous bird. I've actually seen them live. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, in Costa Rica, you can walk right up to the nest. But, I mean, do we know anything about how he chose birds like that?
I don't. I know that the quetzal was for a German alphabet book. So it was not
it's a Q. It's a Q.
It was not published here in the States. So it is sort of a rare bird and a rare artwork, if you will. But it's a beautiful piece. It's perched on a branch with green leaves, these sort of emerald jade green leaves that match the tail feathers, and it's really stunning.
It is stunning. It's pretty amazing.
I found most of the birds. I, you know, this is again not a scientific study, but It seems to me that Eric really preferred peacocks and roosters. And they seem to be in the most abundance.
Well,
I
can understand that.
Probably obvious.
As an artist, yeah, I know. I totally get that. First of all, people may not realize that, but roosters are pretty beautiful, and they have they're different breeds, and they have all sorts of.
Yes.
But peacocks is like, yeah. Now, do we know that he, when I looked at that Quetzal and I looked at his toucan and flamingo and stuff like that, they're, for a children's book, they're a pretty accurate illustration. So is he working from photographs, or is he working from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he had lots of reference books that he used. You know, he obviously has an artistic sensibility and would put his own take on it, but they're absolutely identifiable as the species of bird that they are.
I find that amazing. I find that that's actually not true for a lot of artists. And some of the stuff... he has a series of roosters, obviously. He also loves owls, and I guess most artists would, and ducks. Now, you also have rubber ducks in the exhibition, too.
Yes, those are from the book 10 Little Rubber Ducks, which was based on a true event that happened, I believe, in the late 1990s. A container ship in the Pacific Ocean capsized and 28,000 rubber duck bath toys were released into the waters. And what became, you know, obviously an environmental concern,
yes.
But obviously what was also really interesting was that scientists then studied the sort of migration of these rubber ducks. And it really provided a lot of information about sort of tidal currents, and the rubber ducks ended up all over the world. And that was what fascinated Eric. So he didn't take a scientific approach to the story. He imagined 10 of these rubber ducks floating around the world into the different oceans and meeting other, you know, sea creatures.
Because he's a children's book author. I have no problem with that. That's what he does. That's what makes it an interesting story.
It is. It's fascinating. And there's been books published on this event, you know, scientific journals about this event. I think National Geographic did a story about it as well. We have one of those rubber ducks in our collection, actually. It was found on the shores of Alaska, and we have exhibited it. And it's a wild. I mean, they went.
You must love your job. You must love your job, Ellen, because it's like.
I do. I learn something new every day.
Hey, you get to work with a rubber duck. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, how to conserve a rubber duck with
There's a problem.
On it. That was interesting.
Well, you know, it's interesting. He's also got very specific species, too. A macaroni penguin is a real species. There's a real species called the macaroni penguin. And again, I was amazed about how detailed he gets. I mean, the RR Young, he has a lot of free artistic expression. Like, his picture of a male cardinal is a little bit more stretched out than you would see normally, but you definitely recognize it as a male cardinal. That seemed like it was important for him to put some kind of reality in these drawings. Is that true? I mean, it seems like he worked hard to make the natural history something that young people could learn.
He did, but not always. You know, Eric really was of the philosophy that in art you should be free. And he wrote a book called The Blue Horse, The Artist Who Painted a Blue Horse. And it really is about the freedom of expression. So in that book, he has a polka dot donkey. He has an orange elephant. And even in Brown Bear, there's a purple cat. So are times when he's very playful and interpretive with that. But most of the birds in the current exhibition are recognizable.
That's interesting. There is a famous piece of expressionist art called The Blue Horse.
Yep, he dedicated his book to Franz Marc.
Franz Marc,
right. German
expressionist, exactly.
Who was known for his blue horses, exactly.
Wow. I also want to talk about pelicans and toucans, peacocks.
Okay.
Now, when we look at this artwork, let's talk about the process. What is Eric Carle's favorite way of painting or collaging? He often combines both.
He does. Collage was by far his favorite technique, his favorite form of expression. He worked in a very, very routine that was unique to him. So very often he would be in his studio and he would be painting white tissue papers. And he would paint these tissue papers with no preconceived idea of what they would be used for.
Okay, I just want to stop you there. So he's actually applying the paint on the tissue paper.
Right, that's the first step.
Okay.
So he is probably listening to classical or jazz music and painting, and it's all about color, texture, pattern.
Wow.
You know, he would say the world would melt away while he was painting these. It was just this almost Zen practice. And later, once the works had dried, because he would often layer many colors, he would scratch into the wet paint. But then he would file away these tissue papers in color-coded drawers. And when then it was time to make a collage like a flamingo, he would go to the pink drawer and pull out all the papers, painted tissue papers in there that were pink or had some pink in them. And he would look through those to decide which ones he wanted to use to create the collage. He said that his painted papers are his palette. So rather than mixing paint so much to paint the flamingo, he would create the flamingo from the painted tissue paper. So he would cut out the shapes. He loved arranging shapes. And he never shied away from white space. The flamingo is a perfect example in our exhibition because it is just this very graphic, beautiful bird on a complete white space. I think there might be a little blue paint he did along the bottom edge of the composition. And, he was trained as a graphic artist. And so he took this very graphic sensibility to everything that he made. And he considered a lot of his art like little posters. And, they're just like these beautiful standalone compositions. So
now he's always using acrylic paint on top of the tissue paper?
Yes.
But in the exhibition, there's also linoleum cut block.
Yes. Early in his career, he really enjoyed making linoleum prints or lino cuts, they're often called. So he would carve into a sheet of linoleum, which is a softer material, much easier and more malleable than carving into wood.
Okay.
And you would take away any part that you did not want printed. So it's like a reductive form.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would ink that surface, that's the raised surface, and print it on a piece of paper. And it's a form of relief printing. So whatever image you carved on the block or the sheet would print in reverse. We have a display of several of Eric's linoleum blocks with the prints framed on the wall above the case, and they have that reverse effect, which is kind of fun to see.
Now, we're almost out of time. I also want to mention there's sculpture in this exhibition.
Yes, we have two of Eric's sculptures. One is of an owl, the other is of a rooster, and Eric obviously is known for his picture books, but he experimented in lots of different media. He worked in glass, he worked in metal, aluminum. But the sculptures are so wonderful. They're abstracted, but they're still recognizable.
Oh, yeah.
But they're incredibly elegant, and they have a striking black matte finish. Black wasn't a color Eric worked in that often.
Yeah.
But then they have these just vivid colored dowels or rods that highlight the feathers, if you will, of the birds. And they're one of my favorites. I just love the the sculptures, and it's just a little peek into the other, another side of Eric's creativity.
Now, I know you have great labels, because you always do, but are there going to be any tours given of the exhibition?
Yes, we have tours for the next three Saturdays.
Okay.
You can find the times on our website, but they are just public tours.
And the website is, Ellen? He said, straightlining her?
Yes, carlmuseum.org. And we also, I should mention, on Friday, April 19th at 1 o'clock, we'll have Tom Riccardi visiting the museum with owls other birds of prey. So these are real birds, and he'll do the demonstration outside in Bobby's Meadow. And I've seen him before at the museum, and it's so much fun.
Well,
that's during school vacation week, too.
We're completely out of time. My guest tonight has been Ellen Kiter, chief curator at the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art, where she's having a whale of a time. And we're talking about the exhibition Birdwatching with Eric Carle up through August 25th. Ellen, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.